Coach, I know you're trying to figure this all out on your own. You're investing in your own learning on your own time because you want to show up for your teachers in the best way possible. Building your coaching program is a huge challenge, and it's even more difficult when you're asked to know about literacy practices and how to support them. That's why I created the Confident Literacy Coach. This self-paced course gives you the knowledge, strategies, processes, and downloadable tools that you need to be confident in your coaching work every single day. The new update to the reading and writing modules includes information about literacy that will help you grow your school's practices and grow your students into skilled readers and writers. Check it out at confidentliteracycoach.com and stop reinventing the wheel. Have you felt like you've provided all the PD, you've facilitated all the PLCs, and you've had all the conversations, but your teachers are still stuck? If your teachers are resistant to instructional change or having trouble implementing new things, it might look something like this. They're still using outdated practices that we know don't work. They fight every PLC to cling to their favorite lessons or strategies. You see evidence of poor instructional methods everywhere despite having provided tons of PD in better practices. And kids aren't learning and the same kids are at the bottom of the data chart every single time. Does this sound familiar? To literacy coaches who are committed to helping students grow as readers and writers, this is especially frustrating. That's why I created a free webinar for literacy coaches, but really any coach can value from it. It's all about helping teachers embrace new practices and try out something new, even when they're not excited about it. We'll learn why teachers resist change, how to help teachers feel secure and ready to try something new, and my favorite strategies and methods to encourage choice while expecting and holding them accountable for trying new things. I'm so excited to share this information with you that I created a free download that you'll get when you grab the free pre-recorded webinar at buzzingwithmissb.com/shift. Grab it today. It's totally free and it will make such a difference in your coaching. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Episode 191 of Instructional Coaching with Miss B. Today, we are talking about qualities of strong leaders with my guest, Dwight Carter. I want to remind you that you can grab my free startup mini course at buzzingwithmissb.com/jumpstart. That course is going to walk you in 5 phases through your 3x3 vision, getting yourself set up for an amazing year of coaching. And I know you're going to love it because I had a ton of great feedback about it last year. You can also join my waitlist for Instructional Coaching Startup, the course, which is at buzzingwithmissb.com/startup. That course will walk you through the first 20 days of coaching. It's going to help you prepare for this incredible year with a really strong foundation. Definitely check that out and join the waitlist for a coupon. Okay, Coach, this is the first episode in our series about school leadership. As an instructional coach, whether you're a leader on paper or not, you are absolutely part of school leadership, but you're also in a very special, delicate spot. Have you ever had a really, truly amazing administrator? One who inspires you to be better and to learn and to grow, and who empowers you to make decisions and seems so natural in their leadership position? Today, Dwight Carter is joining us to talk about what makes that kind of strong leader. He's going to share about leadership qualities that we all need to possess in order to really grow our schools. So let's welcome Dwight Carter to the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you, Chrissy. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, I'm really glad that you're here because we're going to talk about this very important topic today. And before we jump in, I would love to just hear about a few things to kind of have you introduce yourself. So who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
All right. Great question. Who do I help? I mainly help our school social workers, school counselors, our building principals and administrators, our school nurses, and I work very, very closely with our superintendent and assistant superintendent. So it's a wide range, but primarily just through listening, conversation, ideation, problem solving, and thinking through some of the processes and systems we have in place. That's how I help people the most.
All right. I love that. Yeah. That's going to help a lot of people today. And my other question is kind of a fun bonus question. What is your favorite movie or TV show of all time?
That was tough. That's a tough question. I would say Favorite movie, I would say favorite actor is more so is Denzel Washington. So anything that he's featured in, it's my favorite. So the three that come to mind are Malcolm X, Mo Better Blues, and Inside Man. Like those are the three movies that I really enjoy. And I watch those repeatedly.
So good. So good to have your favorite. He's excellent. And it's so good to have your favorite movies on
Yeah.
accessible now. You don't have to even rewind them anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so I would love to talk about school leadership. And the first thing that I want to do is paint a picture of what we should not be doing and what you're
Okay.
seeing. So what are school leaders doing when they're going wrong, when they're trying to impact their schools positively? What are some of the mistakes that we're making?
Yeah, when it comes to school leadership, especially now in 2024, it's just very complex. And, being a former school leader, even though it was recent, probably, I guess I would say the last 5 years, it's still very different than it was. It's very different now than it was when I was a school leader. So I want to speak through it, speak from that lens, other than saying I understand the complexity of the job are much different than it was when I was a building principal and an assistant principal. So I'll put that asterisk there. The mistakes that I that they either I've made or that I've seen others make is going at things too fast and trying to solve a problem too quickly without getting all the sides, getting input from other people. And I know there's a need to do things very quickly, but sometimes we have to go slow to go fast. So I say school leaders who make like very quick decisions without getting all the information typically end up making more of an issue much bigger. Another is not listening to teachers. Teachers are boots on the ground. They're in the classroom. They're working with the kids on a day-to-day basis. So not creating space or opportunities to hear from teachers, get their voice and their expertise, I think is a huge mistake that we make as school leaders at times. And then the final thing would be not collaborating with your team. Speaking from a middle school, high school level, even some elementaries, there's a team of administrators that work together. But trying to go solo and not asking for help or tapping into your other leader's expertise is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, that's so true. And as an instructional coach, we were considered part of leadership team at
Yeah.
even an elementary school. And you do hear from I had a really great boss who was really good about listening to her people. And I think that so many times the stories that I heard were, well, they're just doing this, and the boss is just doing whatever idea that they had, and nobody really knows why or where it came from, or they went to a training and brought it back, and now this is what we do, Yeah.
Yeah, again, not explaining why things are changing or even if they should change. And sometimes as school leaders, and I look at school leaders as, middle management because you have direction from district office, but then you have direction and pressure from, staff and parents and things like that. And sometimes decisions are made that you just have to implement as a school leader. Sometimes it comes from the state, sometimes it comes from the district, and it's just there's compliance things that you have to do. I think understanding that, but also understanding the need to explain the why behind that decision. People may not like it, but they're more willing to accept it when they understand why this is being done and why this decision is being made. Again, just from personal experience, I've made that mistake way too many times of not explaining the why, but focusing on so much in the how. And some are really stuck on not moving forward because they didn't understand why it had to be done.
That's true. That's very true. And that's why we get stuck. Not all personality types are super excited about change. So
Right.
at least if we can understand, okay, this is not something that we just unilaterally decided. This is something
Yeah.
we've been handed down, but we're going to try to make it work for our school. We
Yeah,
can.
make the best out of it because, again, it's something that is required.
That's true. So
Yeah.
then you have actually identified five qualities that positively impact school culture. And so, could you talk a little bit about what went into identifying those qualities, how you gathered your information, or what your process was?
Yeah, so the five principles that I highlight in my book, Be Great, Five Principles to Improve School Culture from the Inside Out, those principles came from just personal experience and things that I try to live my life by. By no means am I perfect at these five principles. These are things that I aspire to do. But I've also seen them in practice in a number of schools, and these are things that I tried to implement in my schools as well. So those principles, it's an acronym that says GREAT. That's what the title comes from, Be Great. And it stands for, the G is for grateful. The R is for relational. The E is for enthusiastic. The A is for authentic. And the T means teachable. So be grateful, relational, enthusiastic, authentic, and teachable. Where those came from were was a it was more of a an epiphany, if you can say. So when I became a my first principalship, actually no, when I became an assistant principal, I was trying to come up with a more clever way of sending off, like on emails and newsletters and things like that, other than yours truly or sincerely or just something very basic. So I thought about that for a couple years while I was an assistant. Then when I got my first principalship in 2005, I really started to think about, okay, how do I want to sign off on all my correspondence? Because again, yours truly and sincerely, those are just basic, and it's not really sending off a message. And so driving to work one day, Be Great just popped in my head. So I was like, huh, let me try that out. So I started sending out newsletters, staff emails, things like that. Did it for about 3 weeks. And then I was like, this is corny. This is stupid. Literally, I just say, this is stupid. So I stopped doing it. And within a week, I had a couple teachers stop by, one in particular where she was a strong leader in the building. And she knocked on the door, you know, said, hey, you got a minute? I was like, yeah, come on in. She said, we've been talking. So she was representative of a group. I don't know if she truly was, but she said, we, you know, we've been talking and wondering, why did you stop using Be Great? Did you get in trouble or something? And I just chuckled, like, trouble by who? Like, why would I get in trouble for doing that? I said, no, I didn't get in trouble. I just thought it was corny and, you know, it just didn't mean anything. She said, no, I liked it because it was more aspirational. And it reminded me to keep doing my best every single day. I was shocked. I mean, shocked. It's like, oh, okay. Well, within a few days, then a parent emailed me and said, hey, I noticed you stopped using Be Great on your newsletters. What happened? Did you get in trouble? So I said, time out. Like, what is this? I was like, what is this trouble thing? I mean, what am I not aware of? You know? And I was like, no, I didn't get in trouble. I just, again, same message. I just thought it was corny. And they said, no, I love it. She's like, I've shared it with my boss. He now uses it. And they said, he said, I really enjoyed it because, again, it was a reminder. It was something positive. It was more aspirational. And it was just, it made everything more positive as you presented it. So I was like, hey, yo. So I just started using it again. And since 2005, it stuck. And then when I became the high school principal in my two previous districts, Gahanna and Lincoln High School, I really started to think about, okay, what does this really mean to me? Yes, I know it's a word. It's supposed to be aspirational, but what does it really mean? So I really started to think about it, pray about it, think about how I'm living my life, things that I wanted to live out in my life. And those words just came through. I've always been focused on creating and maintaining and establishing positive relationships. So that was a part of it. Was doing a lot of work on like why and purpose, and that's where enthusiasm came into play. Authenticity is something that's constantly a work in progress for me. So just doing a lot of research on that, you know, a lot of support, talking to people and things like that. And then thinking about being teachable, that's us as educators. We're lifelong learners. And, being teachable is a way, especially during rapid change, as we live in today, we have to be able to adapt and be flexible and learn what we don't know. And then underlying all that is just a practice of gratitude or being grateful. So that's what those things came from. So through personal, you know, obstacles and challenges that I've gone through, like with, you know, with counseling and things like that, some of these principles were instrumental in some of the therapy strategies that I was giving, and found them very beneficial. And then during that process, I really started to research, like, okay, what are the benefits of gratitude, and how do we truly establish and maintain positive relationships, especially at work? You know, so that's where they came from.
Yeah, I like that, and I like that it covers a wide range of characteristics. You know, and you can apply it in different settings, because I mean, we can be grateful. Obviously, we can internally be grateful, but we can also use that to remind us to be grateful to teachers, you know, and
yes.
prompt, you know, thank you for your work. I see this and I appreciate it, you know, and so I like that it's things that we can value, like our core beliefs, which is something that I believe, you know, we all have to decide what those are.
Absolutely.
But then we can use them to, you know, to remind us of what our actions need to be, you know, all the time our interactions with people need to look like this. So I think those are great. So what does it look like for somebody who's maybe not administration? Like you actually, well, counselors are, I guess, considered administration, but not in the traditional sense in terms of, you know, the boss. Like somebody who's in the instructional coaching or someone who's in that kind of a position, what does it look like whenever they demonstrate these leadership qualities?
Yeah. So speaking directly to instructional coaches, one of the best things coaches can do is like visibly show recognition and appreciation for what you're saying in the classroom. And that's the best way of building trust, opening the door, and then helping the person be open to critique, criticism, feedback, and just being teachable. So one of the most tangible things coaches can do is just write handwritten notes about, hey, I saw that you were implementing this strategy. The students responded this way. Great job. It can be a note. It can be a post-it. It can be on a note card. But taking that time to intentionally and specifically thank someone for what they're doing will, I think, be a huge benefit to not only the coach, but also the person that received it. Because I guarantee you this, when we receive positive notes, we typically post those on our desk, on the board, on the calendar. It's visible somewhere as a reminder to say, you know, that person saw what I was doing and appreciated it.
Yeah.
So it becomes our large refrigerator door. And just from personal experience, one of the things I used to do when I was in the building is I bought a very large bag of gold stars that you would put on your lanyard or something like that. Mm-hmm. And especially when I was having a rough day, I would just pull out the bag of stars, pull out a logo, thank you card, and just go around and start writing thank you notes of things that I saw throughout the week or what I experienced in a month, and just took about, you know, 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour walking around the building, and would hand out the notes with the lapel stars. And like I said, I would see those notes posted somewhere on the desk. And inevitably, I saw people with the stars on their lanyards or on their name badge. And it was, again, we're talking about grown folks who are excited about receiving the star.
Yeah.
It was less about the star. It was more about being recognized and shown that they're valued for what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. And then feedback has to be very specific. I think one of the mistakes that leaders often make is blanket appreciation. Or blanket thank yous, like, I appreciate all that you do. Like, that doesn't really resonate with people because it doesn't feel genuine. Mm-hmm. A handwritten note that's specific to what is observed, it's much more genuine and much more appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah, you're making such a good, you're reminding me. I remember I would go into classrooms and I would write little notes about what I saw, and it was just kind of this is what I saw. And then I would say something that I liked, and then I'd ask a question, you know, just to make people think. And I can remember going into classrooms and seeing all the little notes sit like up on the wall next to the teacher's little area. And I don't know why that surprised me, because if somebody had done that for me, I might've done the same, or I would have put it on my notebook. But I just remember seeing it thinking, oh my gosh, that's so sweet that they're holding on to these things and they're putting them up, you know, they're like, these are my little notes. And it was just, I just love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause being teachable, you crave feedback. And that's the way you learn. You know, that's the way we learn. We crave feedback, and we also want to feel valued and validated in the work that we're doing. That's where that sense of belonging comes into play. So leaders, whether you're an instructional coach, building principal, assistant principal, in any position that you are overseeing people, counselor or whatnot, validating people is so crucially important to establishing that psychological safety. And gratitude is a means of making that happen. And I often say we should have a practice of gratitude, not just an attitude of gratitude. Because the practice is actionable. There are things that you're physically doing. Mm-hmm. An attitude is more of a disposition. But if you're putting that into practice, that's where that practice of gratitude can really, really have a positive impact on school culture.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well, how about relational? Would you share a little bit about what that can look like in your everyday
Yeah.
practice?
Yeah, relation being relational just simply means how two or more people are connected. And, you know, as James Comer says, you know, no significant learning occurs without a significant relationship. It's foundational work. You think about Maslow's work. It's all about understanding and meeting the needs of other people so that you can learn and grow on a deeper level. So how do you establish positive relationships at work is, you know, you're embracing and accepting the diversity that exists within the building. And that could be cognitive or physical diversity. It's also through being an active listener. We're great at communicating at times, but part of the communication that we forget is that we have to actively listen, not listen to respond, but listen to understand. And so if you do those two things, and then, like I said, be very specific in what you're asking for, and be open to suggestions and ideas, those are ways in which you establish positive relationships, and then that psychological safety that occurs. And so some of the things that I've done or that I've experienced or that I've seen, especially from a leadership point of view, is taking a few minutes every single day to visit as many people as you possibly can. So walking the building in the morning, and you can read the room. You know if somebody's open to the conversation, or if you know somebody's like really focused on, I'm getting ready for the day, thanks for stopping by, keep on going. So just reading the room and having those informal but intangible moments of asking about family, asking about what's going on in the day, just being present and knowing your staff. And so I'll give you an example of the deep relationships that we established in one of my buildings. And it's celebrating the staff that I had, not celebrating me. So my wife and I adopted our daughter from birth. And nobody knew in the building until it was done. And we found out 3 weeks that, you know, she was coming home. So we had 3 weeks to prepare for 9 months of a preparation. When I returned from my leave, several people in the building put on a shower for us. And it was a diaper shower, basically. We had enough diapers that lasted us for 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
Students got involved. So they I mean, it was just mind blowing, like unbelievably powerful. And the excitement that I saw on people's faces just to be a part of it was, man, special. It was very, very special. And I don't know if that's normal, but that was normal for us.
Yeah.
Because they care deeply about us as people. Just as we cared about them. Like we cried together, we celebrated together, we grew together. Like we had a very strong staff. And that experience, I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. I'll never, ever forget that. But it was all based on deposits that were made over the years, as opposed to a one moment in time.
That's right. Yeah, it takes time. It takes time. You have to put the work in over time. Yeah. Okay, so how about enthusiastic? I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but I think it's a great clue.
Well, it is and it isn't. Okay. So I looked at the root of the word enthusiasm because we think it's about, well, one definition is the outward expression of emotion, and not everybody's that way.
Right.
So I wanted to ensure others that to not try to be something that you're not. So if you're an introvert or you're, you know, pretty reserved and you're not, like, outwardly expressive with your emotions, it doesn't mean you lack enthusiasm. It's just you choose not to do it in that fashion.
That's true.
So the root of the word enthusiasm is entheos, and that means possessed or God-inspired. Mm-hmm. So I start thinking, like, that means that's basically your purpose. So when I say be enthusiastic, what I'm focusing on is focus on your why and focus on, you know, what are you trying to accomplish and why? Mm-hmm. Why you're doing it? Why are you doing what you do? Why did you become a teacher? Why did you become an educator? And don't forget that why. So if enthusiasm is waning or stress levels are high or you're feeling burned out, you got to ask yourself a couple questions. Am I doing what I was supposed to be doing? Am I overcoming the barriers that are facing me? And am I aligned with the purpose that I set out when I became an educator? So those are some reflective questions. So like I said, it's not about the outward expression. It's more so, are we aligned with the the reason why we became educators in the first place. Mm-hmm. And within that realm of educator, there's a number of positions. As you know, we mm-hmm. highlighted, there's coach, there's counselor, assistant principal, principal, superintendent, whatever. And typically, when we're starting to feel that itch or that boredom, that may be a sign that we may need to elevate or level up in our education to get up a different position. Mm-hmm. Or it may be, I just need to do something different altogether. But either way, if you're no longer fired up by your why, you got to start asking yourself, when did I lose that enthusiasm? And then how can I get it back? And if I can't get it back, is it time to transition and do something else? And that's perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's even just changing grade levels.
Absolutely.
Or content areas can be enough to make you feel like, okay, I'm getting new information. I'm thinking differently. I'm using a different part of my brain, and I needed to change.
Yeah. And like I said, that's perfectly okay. And I think it's more common nowadays than it has been, I'd say, in the last decade for that transition, for people to be willing to make that transition, as opposed to sticking it out, fighting, you know, crawling, you know, tooth and nail just to get through to 30 years or 35 years.
Right.
Like, no, it's more acceptable to shift, as you said, move a grade level, move a building, get some more training, get another position that's either higher, or even move, or even leaving the building leadership and returning to the classroom.
Yes.
Like, that's something that's happening a lot these days.
Yeah.
So, I think finding joy and meaning in the work makes it much more beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, it does. Okay, and then authentic. I love this word that you included. I think it's so important. There's so much. I mean, sometimes you do have to fake it till you make it in certain situations.
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, just being authentic is making sure you are knowledgeable of who you are and what. And is your work aligned to your core values? So first is like, it involves identifying your core values, identifying your strengths, your weaknesses, or areas of improvement. What are your triggers? What are your glimmers? Like, what are those things that make you you? And then ensuring that you do not compromise that in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And becoming authentic is a lifelong process. Mm-hmm. Because we're constantly evolving, we're growing, we're changing based on experiences. And so what that looks like in the school building or a district is embracing the differences that we have and celebrate while aligning ourselves with the mission, vision, values, and plan, the strategic plan in the district. So there's giving space for people to show up as their authentic selves. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that creates conflict, but that also strengthens relationships. You know, so that very easily spending time with one another on meaningful projects. It could be a curriculum development. It could be creating some type of celebratory event for students or staff. It could be designing new courses, but allowing people to bring their knowledge, their experience, their interest to the table. It doesn't mean it's all going to be accepted, but together it can truly be a powerful experience for those that are involved. Mm-hmm. And then understanding like how we work and how we resolve conflict. That's all of being a part of being authentic. So that's understanding your communication style. It's understanding your biases, because we all have them.
Right.
It's understanding the type of mindset that we bring on a day-to-day basis. It talks about our character strengths. So one tool I want to share is values. It's called Values in Action, or VIA Character Survey. It's a very powerful scientifically based tool that's free, but it allows you to identify your signature strengths, your supporting strengths, and your lesser strengths. Okay, so it's through research they share that everybody on the face of the earth has 24 characteristics that make up our character, make up who we are. Everybody has 24. If you Google it, you'll see a list of 300, but they're all branches off the same 24.
Okay.
So those 24 are broken up into six virtues. And those, so there's four characteristics per virtue. And so you answer a series of questions. It's about 120 questions, I believe. And then you get a report. And based on your responses, it'll show you your signature strengths. And your signature strengths are those things that just come naturally. They energize you. You don't have to think about it. You light up and you're more enthusiastic when you're operating within your strengths. The middle strengths support the signature strengths, and your lesser strengths are either you don't value them as much, or it takes a little bit more energy to exhibit those strengths. So the more that we learn our strengths, the better we can show up in our, regardless of our position, and then do things that align with, like, we're working that's aligned with our signature strengths.
So interesting. I had to look it up as you were explaining about it. I looked up the site. It's really interesting with
It is.
some of the character strengths. I mean, including appreciation of beauty and excellence,
Yes.
bravery,
Yep.
creativity, fairness, forgiveness. Interesting.
And it's important, though, that you read how they define each one. So I'll give you an example. I was talking to an assistant superintendent in one of our local districts, and I was telling him about this survey or this assessment. He's a phenomenal leader in his building, but leadership showed up as like number 24 on the signature strength. And he took it twice. He was baffled. He talked to his wife. It's like, man, what am I doing? Am I not in the right position? This shows that leadership is not a strength. And I said, make sure you read it, and then let me explain what that means. As he read it, he understood what it meant, but he also was, he's a very humble person, so he didn't value the leadership that he brought to the table. So it just showed that he didn't value that strength. It doesn't mean he lacked it, or that he didn't have it, or it was exhausting to be a leader. He just didn't value that as much, because it just was who he was. But the other, his signature strengths were spot on. So we had to talk through that, and had to talk him off the ledge. But he was pretty excited about it. He shared it with his team, and they had some great discussions from that.
That's neat.
But
Yeah,
also,
and
it also answered a lot of questions too. Like, ah, no wonder.
Yeah, it's helpful to have tools to understand why, like we all see the world so differently, and so to understand why we are each the way that we are, what is it about you that you see it this way that I don't? What is the difference? Like, why are we coming to it from different directions? And that's just, it's helpful to be for people to understand each other better, to work together better, to value those qualities about each other.
And as an instructional coach, that would be a great tool to share with the teachers that you're working with, because that has to be a very trusting relationship. Because the teachers, if they don't feel like the instructional coach has their best interest, or is like reporting or evaluating, they'll shut down, and that's not effective for anybody. So, and then the instructional coach sharing your strengths or their strengths with the team, or with the people that you're working with. Just say, hey, here, I took this survey. Here are my strengths. Here are the things that I got out of it. Let's talk about these two things together. When you take it.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, and then your last quality is teachable.
Just again, we as educators, we also constantly say we're lifelong learners, and we exhibit that. But a part of that too is being reflective in our work. So it's just a willingness to learn and be teachable. And so in today's age of just hyper change, there's so much coming at us that is really, sometimes it's hard to just try to do something new, and we may just revert back to what we know. That's because it's most comfortable, and like close our doors and just leave us alone and let us do our jobs. Well, the world is rapidly changing, and that's not going to slow down. So we have to be open and willing to change. We have a lot of emerging technology that's it's in our schools now. So instead of resisting it, let's be open to it, to explore, what does this actually mean? How can I use it in the classroom? How can I use it in my leadership opportunities? How can I use it as a communication tool? How can it help me be more efficient in my work? And then, and it reminds me of when social media became a big, or when email started. Email was like, shut it down. Nobody use email. That's a primary way of we communicate now. And then it was a social media hit. It's like, shut everything down. Don't allow people to use social media. And it's like, wait a minute. So every new emerging technology that hits schools, the initial reaction is to shut it down and stop. Well, we can't stop it. we can embrace it. We can learn how to use it appropriately. We can create the boundaries, but stopping it is just not possible. So that's where we have to learn to just to be how to use it appropriately, how to use it effectively, how to use it to engage families and students and things of that nature. So those are just some examples of how to be teachable, but also be willing to ask for help. It's okay. And I guarantee you more people are willing to help others than we may think. So let's say you're struggling with a particular group of students or a student. One of the best things that leaders can encourage and instructional coaches can encourage, especially coaches, because they're in so many different classrooms. Mm-hmm. If they recognize a student is doing well in another classroom, talk to the person, the teacher that the student is struggling with, and say, hey, maybe you should have a conversation with Miss Chrissy, because I noticed this student is doing extremely well. Find out from her, what is she doing mm-hmm. that is helping the student be successful? And the ego would say, nope, I don't want her to know that I'm struggling. I'm not going to ask her. But being having a teachable spirit is, you know what, that's a great idea. Let me have a meeting with Miss Chrissy and just explain to her what I'm experiencing, and let me see how she's doing it. Or better yet, ask the coach, hey, can you cover this class period so I can go and observe Miss Chrissy and see how she interacts with that student?
Yeah.
But it takes a teachable spirit and a person willing to learn, to seek out help from other people within the building.
Yeah, and you know, as an instructional coach, you know, you're expected to have some content knowledge and some knowledge, mm-hmm. pedagogical knowledge, but then you're also working with people who are also doing this job. So, you know, there were times that I would walk into a classroom and think, wow, if I were to go back into my room, I would want to take whatever quality. I just saw this amazing thing. I would want to go back into the classroom to do that in this way. Like there were teachers that I know that were just so good at certain things that would be amazing to be able to add that to my skill set, you know, and go back into the classroom and do that. And it can feel like you have to know all the things and have all the answers when you're the coach, but that actually gets in the way of you helping teachers and working as partners with teachers, you know?
Yeah, that's ego talk. That's your ego driven saying, I'm a coach. I'm supposed to know. No, mm-hmm. no, you're a coach. You're supposed to create the conditions for others to be successful. It doesn't mean you have to know everything.
That's right.
And part of creating conditions is bringing in experts in particular fields internally to say, hey, can you help us with this? And so you being a coach is you have the resources, you're knowledgeable of the resources that can support everybody else, but you don't have to know. It's impossible to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So then you mentioned a couple of things already that I think would be really helpful, like the character survey. But how can instructional coaches build these qualities in themselves and possibly contribute to building them in their leadership teams?
Yeah, it takes a willingness to do the work, because it's all personal / professional development. Mm-hmm. And so what coaches can do is recognize their strengths and then offer to present during building PD days, but also encourage other people to present during PD days, because again, we learn best from others that are doing the work with us. And then a coach can also seek out and ask for help in others that are areas that are areas of improvement. Mm-hmm. You know, and it could be webinars, having conferences with people within the building, having conferences with other coaches, talking very openly and honestly with the building principals about, you know, areas that they're struggling with and need some support. And that, I think, will be very beneficial to the culture and the climate. I'll say the culture in the building. If coaches are modeling being teachable and embracing change and growth, then that will inevitably encourage other people to try new things, take those calculated risks, and be courageous in trying new things. They know they have that safety net of support from the coach, but also the administrators.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Well, thank you so much for everything that you shared with us today. And how can people learn more from you?
You can reach me via email at MrDwightCarter@gmail.com. You can reach me on X, which is still weird to say.
It's so weird.
It is at Dwight_Carter, or also you can reach me LinkedIn at, again, same name, Dwight Carter. I have a blog that has been stagnant for probably about a year, but you can also reach me on my blog at Mr. Carter's office.
All right, sounds good. And then I think you're presenting at a conference this summer, right? This June?
Yes. So I'll be presenting for Seven Mindsets. They have a, I think it's called Mindset University Conference. It's in Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida. I want to say it's June 24th and 25th. So I'll be presenting my session, Be Great, Five Principles to Improve School Culture from the Inside Out, during that. So you can search that on the web and register, and I hope to see you in St. Petersburg.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking with Dwight about his very practical and thoughtful approach to leadership. I think that those characteristics are so important. And it kind of helps you think about, okay, well, what's really important to me and how can I build sort of the core beliefs in my work that will help me demonstrate what I think matters to teachers and to your administration. So I wanted to remind you, don't forget that you can grab that free coaching into your inbox, very short 5-day sequence. That is the mini startup course at buzzingwithmissb.com/jumpstart. And then you, of course, can also join the waitlist for instructional coaching startup. Last year, it was so great. We had so many coaches. And then, so what happens is you get the course, you get the 20 days of videos that tell you exactly what to do each day. You get the resources to do the work every single day of those videos. And then you also get to join the live Facebook group where we walk through the course one day at a time. And so every day I'm like, okay, this is what you're doing today. Check in, share, and people can share their artifacts. And it's such a cool thing to do. So check that out at buzzingwithmissb.com/startup. Remember, if it's not open when you check it out, that is okay because you can join the waitlist and you will get a coupon. And coupons are my favorite thing because they make me feel so accomplished when I use them. So definitely head to buzzingwithmissb.com/startup to join that today. Next week, we are going to continue to look at school leadership with talking up to John Safier of the Research for Better Teaching. And we are going to look at how school leaders can create a culture of learning and growth, because that's a huge focus for us. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching.